Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of August, Anno Domini 2010, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour,
I got to play with the levels here a little bit. It's
we're all on the wrong side today.
No, I'm not.
Well, you're not, but Steve is. Steve and I are because he forgot his computer.
In my rush this morning, I happened to mention to my wife that I was going to Wegmans to pick up the donuts. It was my turn to get the donuts today. And so, of course, she gave me this giant list of things I had to buy. And I thought the computer was still in the car, and it's on the living room table. So, of course, I call home and ask her to bring it to me. And and you can see it coming through the door any minute now, can you?
Your only hope at this point is your wife is not listening to the show.
Yeah. He's dead meat.
That's all I have to say.
She was going to take our son to the rec center and go swimming.
That's
beautiful, beautiful pool at the Parenton Rec Center.
Yeah.
Water slides, and they have apparently they have this jacuzzi thing there. And we've only lived there 3 years, and I haven't made it yet.
You will, though.
Yeah.
We have faith. All right, let's start with the news of the week. On Thursday, Microsoft said it will deliver a record 14 security updates next week to patch a record-tying 34 vulnerabilities in Windows, Internet Explorer, Office, and Silverlight. We are, of course, talking about Microsoft's monthly visitor when they update all the products that they own. This one's going to be huge. People still running Windows XP Service Pack 2 will receive only a few of those fixes. You need to move up to Service Pack 3. We keep saying this. We keep saying this. Eventually, we're going to start asking people, are you on Service Pack 2? We can't help you because all the fixes you want are in Service Pack 3. If you don't upgrade, don't call us. We can't help you.
And Microsoft takes down knowledge base articles on older service packs, which is stupid because it costs them virtually nothing.
Well, right. But they want people to move up. Anyway, the 14 updates, Microsoft dubs them bulletins, are a record-beating count from both February 2010 and October 2010, beating them by one. The 34 individual patches equals the single-month record, which was first set last October and repeated in June 2010. And the 8 critical updates next week will also tie the record set in October 2009. Big, big, big update. Microsoft has been shipping alternating large and small batches of fixes, with the larger-sized updates landing in even-numbered months. So this month's big numbers shouldn't come as a complete shock. In July, for example, the company issued just 4 bulletins, and that patched 5 vulnerabilities. June's had 10 bulletins that fixed 34 flaws. IE is also patched on an every other month schedule, so Microsoft last fixed IE flaws in June. Now they'll do it again this August. According to Microsoft's monthly advanced notification, the company will deliver 10 updates for Windows. Half of them are critical. The other 5 are rated important. Those are their top 2 ratings. The 2 updates will patch 1 or more critical bugs in IE and Silverlight, another pair affect Office. All currently supported versions of Windows are impacted by multiple updates, Microsoft said, using impact incorrectly, as if it were a verb. With Windows XP Service Pack 3, the oldest edition that receives patches affected by all 5 Windows-only critical updates, as well as the critical IE and Silverlight fixes. Nor will Windows 7 escape next week. 2 of the 5 critical Windows updates apply to the newest operating system, as do the critical IE and Silverlight patches. Windows 7 will receive at least 10 of the 14 planned updates. The Office updates are aimed at flaws in Word and Excel and affect all versions of the word processor and spreadsheet, with the exception of those in Office 2010. Both updates also apply to the Mac editions of Word and Excel. So if you are not updating regularly, this is really the month to do it. Our question to you, of course, we have a poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And that poll question is, are you surprised at the size of this month's Microsoft patch? The choices are, oh my, yes. And I'm surprised they caught that many at once. And wait, Microsoft needs updates? I'm one of those insufferable Apple jerks. Or I'm one of those smug Linux geekazoids.
How come I get to be the jerk and you get to be the geekazoid?
I thought about that for a while. I had geekazoid and jerk switched around and smug
but the best
and
part is
insufferable swapped around. And this just happened to be what I ended up with. Shut up.
And I get clear and free.
You get to be surprised at the size of the update. So far, we've got 36 people. Actually, the geekazoids are winning. The jerks are second last at this point. Of course, once you're done voting in the poll, we know in this particular case you'll have a lot more to say. So you'll look at the little yellow box underneath poll. And if you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can vote in a poll of the week, which is, what do you think about this Microsoft patch? And in fact, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Tell us what you think of this month's patch. Whether or not you're Windows, a poor Windows user, Linux geekazoid, or an Apple jerk. Give us a call and tell us what you think. Oh, I'm sorry.
One thing we should mention, though, because if folks are probably looking for the camera, we don't have it.
Yeah, because it connects into Steve's Mac, which is sitting on his dining room table while his wife and daughter are at the pool. They're at the pool. At 60, it's like 68 degrees out today, and they're at a pool, did you say?
Well, they didn't go yesterday, so... For all day long,
go yesterday when it was hot, so they're going today when it's cold.
All day long, Shirley kept telling Matthew, let's go to the pool, let's go to the pool, and he was busy playing his video game. And then at like 4 o'clock, he said, all right, let's go to the pool. And, well, no, we have to leave for the observatory at 6. We went down to the Mies Observatory in Bristol Mountain last night, run by the U of R, and they have a 24-inch refracting telescope, and the clouds kept moving in front of everything. So every time we'd aim at an object, and the cloud would move in. So we'd aim at another object, and the cloud would move in. Finally, we just left it aimed somewhere and waited for the cloud to move away.
There you go.
So we saw a globular cluster. We saw a ring nebula. It was really neat.
It was way too it was way too cloudy this morning for the Perseids.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the light show.
Yeah, it was way too.
That was next week.
The meteor shower? No, I think it was too cloudy anyway. Mm-hmm. I was up anyway for market, so it didn't matter to me.
Oh, I got to put in a shameless plug. As folks know, the Park Ave Festival is going on right now, and I will be down there personing the booth from 4 to 6. So if you want, come on down, say hello. I think we still got some of our great window stickers to hand out, and they're giving away some great CDs. So if you get a chance, come on down, say hello, and I'll be down there also tomorrow morning from 9:30 to 11.
Yeah, the Perseids are August 11th through 13th.
Oh, good. Then I haven't missed them.
Next week.
It's next
week. So you can miss them next week.
You're right. It'll be too cloudy next week. Well, I missed the aurora because of clouds.
Yeah, that coronal mass ejection. How many millions of cubic kilometers of mass?
Yeah, my favorite part was that it ranged. If you went to a real science site, it said there is the possibility that you will, you know, have a glitch in your RAM. There is the possibility that there will be some communications glitches on the satellites. And if you went to any of the other sites, it was Armageddon, end of the world, call Bruce Willis. We're done. As it turns out, they were all wrong. Almost nothing happened, really, which is good. I'm not saying it's bad, but, it's good. There was a CME, Coronal Man.
Now how did that? The first hit I found is from the Ethiopian Review.
Sure. It's probably got the best information.
That's a really nice picture of the sun.
Yep. Google has a whole bunch of things. It's not just...
Well, this is Bing because we're Microsoft.
Oh, of course, it's a Microsoft. And that explains why, I suppose.
That
I don't
could
know.
Be.
It was amazing. It was, you know, a huge ejection of solar mass.
Yeah.
Of course, headed right for us.
By the time it gets here, we ain't going to have to worry about it.
It's only 8 minutes. It takes 8 minutes for light to reach the Earth. Of course, this is mass, so it takes a lot longer.
It took a couple of days this time.
A couple of days. Yeah. We saw the light and knew the mass was coming. But as far as what happened, it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was apparently a very spectacular aurora borealis in places.
To make it this far south, too.
Right. Well, no, they said we would see in northern New York, which may not, in fact, be us.
No, that could be farther on up into Hudson Valley. Yeah.
But I got up anyway, and it was too cloudy, and I didn't see anything. And of course, I would have had to climb up onto my roof to see around the other house.
Well, where Seabird is. Up there in Lake George area and all that. Probably see it up in there. Yeah. Get away from the lights where you can put your hand up in front of your face and you can't even see it.
Well, see, that's the best ideal place. We used to go there bringing a telescope with us. And I remember climbing Mount Mercy with a Casa Grande telescope tube on my back. It was big. It was. I don't remember if it was a 12-inch or it was big. And I climbed Mount Mercy with that thing on my back. And, you know, one of the guys carrying, like, the tripod, and somebody else is carrying the spotter scope, and another guy's got his cameras. And How did I get stuck with it? Somebody else carries it on the way down. Thank you very much.
Well, down is easy.
Yeah. Well, still, it wasn't me. That's the important part.
Things go down by themselves.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not if you want to keep them for the next time.
Yeah, but there was poor planning on your part.
Yeah, it really was. I was.
You should have taken it down, not up.
That's exactly right. I was too nice a guy. That's the last time I was a nice guy ever. So yeah, it was really, really pleasant. And for a couple of years, I did summer stock in Spencertown, New York, which was And yeah, that was great. And we and boy, you'd go outside your house of an evening, and truly, all you could see were fireflies and stars. It was truly beautiful. It was truly beautiful.
How are the mosquitoes though?
Not so bad. They, you know, it's farmland, so they pesticided everything.
One cool place I always still find amazing. But
yeah, who cares? If you're not going to call, listen, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415 and get us back to talking about computers.
Yeah.
But that's your job. Our job is to talk about whatever we want.
And but talking about mosquitoes and that, there's a neat place down in Canandaigua. If you go down to Canandaigua, like there, to the end of the street where the pier and all that is, there's some homesteads there. And if you go right around dusk, folks, especially during the summer months, are sitting up. And you can sit down there and not get bitten.
Wow.
Because flying all around these docks are little bats.
Yeah.
And they'll fly over your head and everything else. This one gentleman that I was talking to one time, he had them flying through his house. This little shed he had. He had a front door and a back door. And the thing, back and forth. But they could sit out there. It didn't bother anybody.
Right.
And they ate their weight in bugs in.
Well, that could well be it, because our we lived in a school that used to be a Shaker farm.
Oh.
And our building was right next to the largest stone barn in North America, which had burned down the year before we got there. Not our fault.
How does stone burn?
Well,
very carefully.
The roof and the inside. Shut up. Anyway,
I missed this last week.
The rest of the place was full of, just full of bats, thousands and thousands of bats, and that may well be why we didn't get bitten.
Well, I had them in Robie. I actually built a bat cage, a home. All it is literally a slab of wood with some mesh.
Yeah.
And they crawl up into the mesh, and they just hang onto this mesh. I had it on the side of my house there on Robie, but they were great.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are really scared of them, bothered by them, and yes, they can carry rabies. Yes, they can get in your hair, but as long as you're a little bit careful, they're not intent on bothering you. They get rid of the bugs.
That's all they wanted to do.
They eat hundreds of pounds of bugs.
Yeah.
Every night.
So exactly. I had it up in the far side of the house of the eve, close to the woods.
Yeah.
And I think I wound up with maybe two or three there. Very small. Not these huge things that you see in the movies. No, it's not Mothra.
Little brown bats.
Little brown bats, and they ate their weight. Of course, they like the pear tree, too. Pear tree.
They would. Sure. Absolutely.
Hang on there.
Any partridges?
In the pear tree?
Don't we have some calls coming in or something?
Yeah.
Well, please call.
What's going on?
You don't want to get Steve going.
For those of you who are wondering, I still did not go and buy that Augin GenTouch 78, the 7-inch Android tablet. I listened in to our friends in the chat last week. Chris Reich is our friend of the show. Chris Reich is recording the show for us. Bless you. Last week they were all telling me don't go buy one. Read these reviews, junk. And apparently it really is. And it's not, it's the fact that it's $150 worth of hardware and it's just not good. So I did not go buy one. Although I'm still torn. I'm still torn because it's only $150.
Yeah.
And how much do you expect for $150?
Well, it's just like my brother. He wound up picking up a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Went over to, I think it was, Walmart.
Yep.
For under $300. It was like $297. Got a 15-inch display. It was 2 gig of memory, 150 gig hard drive, DVD burner in it.
Yep.
For $300, it's like, he's going to pick up another one and send it to my nephew who's over in Afghanistan because, let's say, my grandson, not always the most patient person.
You think?
Yeah, when he was home on leave the last time he brought it in. He goes, Uncle Dave, can you take a look at this? And some of the keys.
Well,
super glue isn't even helping. Yes,
we were looking at Woot today, woot.com, and there's 10-inch notebooks for $199. netbooks, really. $199 a gig of RAM. They're refurbished. They're gateways. So we're not entirely certain that even at $199, they're really worth it. But still, what the heck, for $199, hard to go wrong, really. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. We're going to go to the news, and then we're going to go to the phones at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. On Thursday, the United States Federal Communications Commission called off negotiations on a network neutrality compromise scheduled for the coming days, saying the talks have not been fruitful enough. Bless you. The FCC's decision to cancel this round of negotiations comes after news reports late Wednesday that Google and Verizon Communications were close to their own deal on network management practices. The negotiations have been productive on several fronts, according to Edward Lazarus, the FCC's chief of staff. However, the discussions have not generated a robust framework to preserve the openness and freedom of the Internet, one that drives innovation, investment, free speech, and consumer choice, he added. We need the Mormon Tabernacle Choir behind this guy. All options remain on the table as we continue to seek broad input on this vital issue. An FCC spokes individual didn't say whether the FCC's decision to call off the talks and the news reports on Verizon and Google's negotiations were related. We'll talk about those talks in the next news item. The FCC has been hosting net neutrality negotiations with broadband providers and other interest groups since June after providers and dozens of U.S. lawmakers objected to the FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski's plan to create formal rules at the agency. Net neutrality rules would prohibit broadband providers from selectively blocking or slowing web traffic. Verizon said Thursday it remains committed to the negotiations hosted by the FCC, despite the news reports that it was close to a private deal with Google. Several U.S. lawmakers have questioned whether the FCC should reclassify broadband, suggesting instead that Congress take up net neutrality. Everybody wants their say in this. Gigi Sohn, president of digital rights group Public Knowledge, called on the FCC to move forward in net neutrality rules following the collapse of negotiations. So our question to you, what do you think of the idea of net neutrality? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Chris did. Chris, where are you calling from?
The Canal Path, Bike Path, and Gate.
Nice. How are things out there? A little cool today, eh?
Nice for a walk and sunny, you know.
Yeah, exactly. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm thinking about my eye touch, and I've had it for quite a while, and I'm thinking about possibly doing some audiobooks. I do a lot of podcasting, a lot of other stuff with it, but I thought, I'll do some audiobooks. But I'm really wanting to do something that I don't have to hook it up to the computer. Is there any way to circumvent the computer and just get audiobooks on my iTouch?
Yeah, you can buy audiobooks from any website using the browser built into the iTouch. You do have to be connected to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Audible just released their new Audible application for the iPod Touch, and it their early reviews are that it's working very, very, very well. If
don't you have to do a membership with that, though? I was just thinking I kind of want to just like a book, not like a whole membership.
One of the big things is that a typical audiobook is usually $30 to $40, and your Audible membership is $15 a month, and you get one book free a month. So if you listen to a lot of audiobooks, it's much cheaper for memberships. They also have 2-book-a-month deals as well. And they're running, they always run all kinds of offers now. I think one of the latest ones I read is it's $7.50 a month for 3 months, and then you still get one book free a month. So if you like audiobooks, it's a much more cost-effective.
Instead of paying $20 or $30
per book
for the CDs a bookstore, yeah.
Or you can also go into the iTunes store on the iPhone itself and buy audiobooks one at a time. Or from the Audible website, or virtually any website that that sells audiobooks. The trick is that they have to be MP3 format or compatible with the iPod and compatible with the iTunes player on the iPod. So that's why Audible is sort of the best bet, because it already is
so
compatible.
So I can really just go to iTunes, too, and find a book there, an audiobook? And
the iTunes store.
Right to my iTouch.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. That's what I wanted to know. So thanks.
Sure.
There you go.
Thank you.
serial novels as podcasts now. If you're, you know, it always reminds me of the old radio serials from the 20s and 30s and 40s. And a lot of these authors have now gotten book deals because they can go to a publisher and say, I've got 30,000 people listening to my audiobook every week.
Right.
You know, give me a book deal, and they're getting them. One of the authors I listen to is Scott Sigler, and he writes horror science fiction. He did a story about football, because he's also a big football fan, where this human from a backwater planet joins the big leagues, and all the other players are aliens. The defensive linebackers are 12-foot monsters that literally want to eat you. The wide receivers are these little tiny balls of fur that can jump 15 feet
in
the air.
How old is this book?
A couple, 3 years.
We've talked about this before.
Probably,
I read one
yeah.
of those many, many years ago, and I've got it on my shelf. I don't remember what the name is.
It's
the same idea.
Well, he's planning on doing a series. This the first one he put out was called The Rookie, and I think it's just coming out in hardcover now. And he's going to have books for every year of this guy's football career. But so it's about racial prejudice, well, species prejudice. Because the human doesn't like the aliens, and it's and the football leagues are all run by the mob because they use the away games to ship their illegal goods.
Right.
It's a really, really interesting series of books. But he's got some crazy ones. He's got one called Ancestor that just did come out in hardcover. A group of scientists are trying to breed the common ancestor of all mammals so that they can do universal organ transplants. And it turns out there's a reason why the common ancestors of all mammals are extinct now. And they really are hungry.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a Frederick Pohl novel. He wrote a great story called Gladiator at Law. Well, it doesn't matter. We have another caller. His name is John. Where are you calling from, John?
Rochester, New York.
Okie doke. What's your question?
I'm running this laptop. Yesterday I go to 07 and it may be.
There you go.
I've got Norton Internet Security Tango. I have in the background that cloud computer. Antivirus, I lied to you. Antivirus.
Right.
Do I have any problems with the two of them, between Norton and the... I haven't so far.
Well, it's usually better to just run one.
Yeah.
And certainly both are good. I won't say...
On the Norton, is the Norton version 10?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'd be honest with you, I'd go with the Norton 10. I have been very impressed with the Norton 10. We've been testing it out now for about a month and a half, and it's not the pig that it used to be. I mean, that's a polite way to say it.
That's damning with faint praise, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it was.
Yeah, a lot of times what can happen is that the antivirus programs will fight each other. The one program will see the other's antivirus definitions as viruses, and you can get false positives out of it.
But no, Norton just used to be a big hog. I mean, it just would sit there and take up so much resources. It would slow a machine down the best way we could. And folks were always amazed that we took it off and said, oh, my computer's running so much faster. They have finally trimmed it down. And they, matter of fact, they were so conscious about it, they put up meters just to show you how more efficient the new Norton 10 is, because they wound up getting such a stigma from their previous version, said it was a bunch of junk,
right.
This is really working good, and I agree with them.
Well, the short answer here is you should run with one.
Not what I wanted to hear, but that's life. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Now, that doesn't mean you can't keep the other one around for on-demand checking. You know, if you really feel that whatever one you decide to run normally is not really doing the job, then you can run the other one. But generally speaking, they all pretty much do the same job.
And that's one of each type. So one antivirus, one anti-malware. Although on our Security Tango, we do recommend Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware, two different anti-malware programs,
yeah,
but run them separately because they do two different functions.
One goes deep in one goes deep in the other. And, you know, like anything else, if you want to cover all bases.
Right. One goes wide across your system. The other goes deep into the register.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of them to complement each other.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Don. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Hilton.
And how are things in lovely Hilton today?
Oh, sunny and nice.
You sound surprised.
Yeah.
When's the Hilton Fest coming up?
Apple Festival. That's in September,
isn't
it?
I don't know.
September, October?
Sure.
Yes, yeah, I think it's one of the last festivals of the season.
Yeah. What's your story here, Don?
Well,
what's your question?
Someone was calling about getting books that you can listen to.
Right, Chris was, yep.
Well... If you want books that are in public domain, you can get them for free. The an outfit by the name of LibriVox, LibriVox,
right,
.org. And they have lots and lots of books that are public domain, and they're free.
Right. One thing I've discovered at LibriVox is the quality of the readers.
They vary.
It varies, but it is a good series of books. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I just thought I'd pass that on because this lady was asking, and there are a lot of good ones. I've listened to a lot of good Mark Twain.
Yep. A lot of good stuff. Thank you, Don. Thank you very much. I love it when our listeners call in, because I knew there was that one, and I just could not think of the name, and I just didn't have time to find it. I just didn't. Thank you very much for helping us out. I'm sure Chris is still listening because she's stuck out on the bike path without a bike. She sounded like she was walking.
Sounds like she's walking, walking on the bike. I know people that have walked on the bike path and had pretty serious accidents with bicyclists that don't get out of the way.
They're ripping up all of RIT right now, putting in bike paths specifically to solve that problem.
So one bike path and one sidewalk?
Yes.
Nice.
So be careful out there, Chris. And anybody who's out there listening to us, watch out for Chris.
Yeah, is she computing?
She sounds like a nice lady.
What is she doing, computing as she's walking?
No, she's just walking, but she suddenly realized she was walking along thinking, you know, I'd really be love being able to listen to a book right now. And naturally
I'm glad
thought
she's
of
listening
us.
To us instead.
Right. And would rather be reading a book right now. So she called us to ask that question.
Archive.org also has a lot of open or public domain books and poetry, audiobooks available, as well as video and other types of media.
Right. I read a lot of the Bain books, B-A-E-N, Bain books, Bain Library. I think it's dot something. and what they do is they have very famous, they're science fiction and fantasy, and they have lots and lots of their authors who, the Bain Free Library. What's the URL?
Bain.com/library.
There you go. And B-A-E-N is Bain. And they have lots and lots of books that are, basically what they've done is they said, look, here's the deal. We've got, these authors have made their money on these books, and so now we're going to offer them free.
Great.
And the authors volunteer to do that, and I think it's so. My hope is that you will buy the books of those authors that are still on sale in gratitude for reading their books, which are now free.
Gary Parnell was on This Week in Tech a couple weeks ago.
I keep forgetting.
You can go back in the archives and listen to him. He is so cool to listen to.
He really is.
I keep forgetting.
Well, but I keep forgetting that he's an 80-year-old Southern cracker-sounding kind of guy.
Yeah. And he was talking about...
I kept waiting for him to come on. I suddenly realized that...
That's him, yeah. Kind of a high-pitched...
I'm an 80-year-old man!
Yeah. And he was talking about the audiobooks that are coming up on Audible, that the Audible is doing a real big push into science fiction, and they've opened their own studios and are doing a lot more of their own recording, so the publishers, science fiction tends to be sort of low on publishers' lists. And he says he's been surprised about the size of royalty checks he's getting.
That's good. Good for him.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the few.
I don't listen to as many. I don't have time to listen to anything anymore. But you know, it's a 20-minute drive to work, and I'm either listening to actual news, but I've started kind of listening to podcasts on the way home. And it's hard finding good ones. There's a lot of really bad ones out there. You know, I'm sorry. And I don't know whether you want to call them amateurish or what the problem is. But I don't want to hear 20 minutes of people going, you know, it's kind of...
Or count the ums.
Yeah, or count the ums. We all do ums, but it gets amazing in there with that. But mostly they don't know what they don't have anything to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just don't. Couple that I really like are running it really well. They have a bunch of people who call in. They're not all in the same studio. And so, one, the Android guys. The guy is pretty doggone good about making sure that, you know, he'll say, Steve, do you want to talk? Nick, what do you think about this? And so he'll go, you know, Dave, how do you feel? So he gets everybody to talk, but not everybody's jumping on each other. They all know they're going to get a turn to talk about it. It really is very well done. Well done. I like that one a lot, but a lot of them just annoy the heck out of me.
It's a lot like desktop publishing in the early days. And when the Macintosh came out and we had that graphical ability and you used 27 fonts on the same page.
Yes.
there was a lot of crap that came out.
There's a lot of it. And I've been reading a bunch of self-published books, a lot of science fiction that's self-published. Yep. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are good. And some of them you think, oh, yeah, there's a reason this is published.
Yeah.
And I just put one of those down earlier today. It was like, okay, the premise is good. I like the idea, but no. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. If you're interested in audiobooks as well, if you're interested in Doctor Who and audiobooks, BigFinish.com, Big Finish, has a bunch of audiobooks. They aren't cheap, certainly aren't free, at least the ones I've seen so far. But they have a bunch of audiobooks on Doctor Who, and you can subscribe to them, download them. It's a pretty good deal. They have collections of books. All right, Google, Thursday denied reports that it's in talks with Verizon for a deal that could undermine net neutrality. I told you we'd be talking about this. According to reports in Thursday's Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, Google and Verizon, both major online players, are close to finalizing an agreement that would have Verizon speeding some online content more quickly than other content if the content's creators pay for it. YouTube, which is owned by Google, could greatly benefit by having its bandwidth-weighty videos get priority treatment. Google, however, says that there is no basis to the reports. The New York Times is quite simply wrong, said the Google spokesman with the improbable name Mystique Cano. We have not had any conversations with Verizon about paying for carriage of Google traffic. We remain as committed as we always have been to an open internet. However, the Wall Street Journal reported that Verizon confirmed that it had been in ongoing talks with Google and the U.S. Federal Communications Commission for 10 months. So as usual, we have people talking out of both sides of their blowholes, and we're left to guess what the truth is. What do you think the truth is? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. We're looking for both reasoned debate and, of course, complete whack jobs with conspiracy theories. So feel free to give us a call, whatever you have. One of the interesting things to me, of course, would be if Google and Verizon did come to a conclusion, come to an agreement that said Google would pay Verizon to push to push YouTube videos faster over their network.
Well, that's...
Let me finish. Yeah. Does that mean that I now, for those of us who are, I'm still on grandfathered into the all-you-can-eat plan, but does that mean that those of us who are on tiered connections with Verizon will no longer have to pay for YouTube video downloads?
And does that become the reverse of net neutrality? We're paying...
Well, it would be exactly the net. Yeah, exactly the reverse of net neutrality. Exactly.
So if you don't pay, we'll slow you down. Right. There goes that slippery slope again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I don't know if that means they slow you down, but they don't speed you up, which would be, you know... The idea being that you can set...
You won't get
on any decent router, you can set the priority of any type of packet. So you can say, just generically, video packets, or you could say packets from YouTube.com get first priority. So they don't actually go out faster, but they go out more often. So even though you're sharing the connection with millions and billions of other people doing stuff, your packets get a priority, so they go out first, so it seems faster to you.
Mm-hmm. You makes know, sense.
They're not going faster, but they get to you more often. Mm-hmm. So the end result is it seems faster to you.
The illusion.
The illusion of fasterness.
We sit there and talk about it, and then, you know, again, I had another client that I had to go back to or brought the machine in, and they're still doing dial-up.
Oh, my golly, Ned, no.
It's like...
Now, it's in the Mac world, they took modems out 2-3 years ago. Same thing in the PC world, right? They don't include modems anymore?
No, laptops.
Really?
Desktops, you know, still have, they're pretty much done with. The laptops, they still have modems in them because they need to. And that's what they were using.
Well, whether or not they need to, they have them.
Yeah, with Ethernet and Wi-Fi everywhere, the need for modems is dying off.
But this client still used it. It's like, no. I had to take it back, take it into the shop. Quick, hooked it up to the network, got all these downloads. As a matter of fact, I got them up.
Yeah.
They were trying to do Service Pack 3.
Ain't happening over dial-up. Well, and that's the problem. Back in the day when nobody cared if your machine got hacked, I mean, nobody at Microsoft, and there were no updates and things like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, what were you downloading? You were downloading text. There weren't even many pictures, unless you were on some of the...
When we were on FidoNet, it was all... Remember FidoNet? Yeah, that was all text. I mean, folks, you know, soon forget how much, you know, it has changed just in the past.
And programs were pretty small.
Yeah. You know, that story we tell. Yeah. That you came over and got me hooked up. And
yeah. You should have heard him that next morning.
Oh.
You should have heard him. For those of you who haven't heard the story, Dave had been on dial-up forever. And Lori was a little angry at the $300 phone bills you were getting.
Oh, she was ready to cut my cable.
Yeah, so to speak. And so, yeah, so I came over and said, look, you need to be on the internet. And we got them all hooked up. And I'm leaving. And now you have to understand, Dave and I know each other pretty well.
Oh, we've known each other for a lifetime.
Once he got on that machine, he ignored me. I sat there for like 40 minutes. He never
even remember you leaving.
That's exactly right. And I said to him, now, shall I call you at like 11 or 11:30 so you'll go to bed? He said, no, I'll do it. Now, I'm talking to his back, okay?
Yeah.
He never even looked around. No, I'll do it. I said, I'll call you about 11:30. He said, no, don't call me. Yeah. And he said, I'll get angry if you call me. I said, all right, I won't call you. So I go to bed. The phone rings at what, 6:30, I think it was?
Yeah,
6:00?
It was after. Well, I was already up for my wake-up call. Because I had the service, that would call and wake me up. Because it was notorious for, back in the days, hitting the alarm, turning it off.
Yeah.
And then not going, you know, getting up in time for work. And it's like, and I was still up for them. And I got the call from them. And then I gave you a delightful little call.
He called me. I pick up the phone. No, the phone's ringing at 6:30 in the morning. That's never good news, right? So I pick up the phone. Hello? You son of a... I don't remember exactly what you said, but it was something along that line.
Blessed person, you.
I just laughed. And I said... Yeah, hi, Dave. Up all night, were you? I think if the FCC had heard that phone call, you would have been arrested.
My eyes were just glazed. I mean, you know, it was like, holy macro, like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, because stuff was coming so fast.
Oh, I mean, you know, compared to what we did before.
Sure.
Damn.
So, yes. And now you see people are back doing that.
Oh, yeah.
But back in the day, it was text only, you know?
Yeah,
Blue Wave and all that stuff.
I used to carry hundreds of floppy disks with me of program updates and driver updates that I had already downloaded. And then that turned into dozens of CDs. And now I don't even bother because it's easy just to download it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you did have to carry something, it would be one thumb drive.
Now it's the diagnostic disks.
Well, right. Yeah, I had a backpack. I've still got the backpack that it's got my tools in. And I used to have the one holder for a disc, another one for CDs, and I was constantly updating it and everything else. Heck no, I walk around with just one flash drive in my pocket.
And you're done.
Yeah.
Yep.
Matter of fact, the newest one I got, love this one, and it's called Mobile Light, and it's by Kingston. But this one holds three different media sizes.
Nice. Yeah, because we were talking about that one time because you were saying you couldn't find any that locked, and I said you need this kind.
This is the what we're talking about, folks. Here's the thing.
Look at this. Micro SD, mini SD, and a regular SD card.
Here's what we're talking about. Back in the day, everybody was very, you know, conscious about making sure that their floppies and everything else, that you put the lock on it. You'd put the little, on a 3.5-inch floppy.
Because when you put it in somebody else's machine, the first thing, if it's infected, the first thing it'll do is infect you if you don't lock it.
But we have gotten so complacent that nowadays, you know, everybody's walking around with these flash drives. They're great. I mean, you can get them in all sizes up to 16 and whatever size gig you want. But the problem is there is no locking mechanism.
Yep.
So with this new style that I have, you can literally take out the SD card, which has a locking mechanism on it.
Right.
I can slide it locking, lock it in place. So that what it basically does is this way, if I go to a client's machine, I can put my jump drive in there, know that I'm not going to get any of their viruses, and sure enough, there's not going to be anything on mine because it's locked. So nothing can get there, so I'm not giving them anything.
Right.
That I don't want to.
Right.
And, you know, it's scary, the number four. Oh, here, just use my jump drive. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think not, but thank you for the offer.
Yes, thank you very much. But
Before I forget, I want to credit where credit is due. The doctor over in the IRC chat is the one who mentioned Big Finish. He also says goodbye, Google Wave. Google Wave was just one of those ideas that never gelled. Google has a lot of those, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get one that hits, holy mother of pearl, it hits hard. You know, Google Voice is taking over everything.
Over Skype?
Google Voice can do amazing things.
Well, I haven't tried that. I'm still using Skype.
Well, with Google Voice, for example, I have a Google Voice number.
Okay.
If you call it, I can set it up so that you call the Google Voice number.
Mm-hmm.
Google Voice can ring every phone I own in order to find me if I wanted to. Every phone I own.
Okay. So if you get an important call and you don't want to miss it.
You give them Google Voice and you set it to ring everything. And then I can set it so that I pick up the phone and it says, Dave, it says to you who's calling, Dave Enright. I get the phone and says, Dave Enright. I say, well, I'll take that call, or I won't take that call, or however that wants to work. And if I decide I don't want to take your call, you go to voicemail. And when you go to voicemail, what happens is Google Voice not only records the announcement, but also transcribes it for me, sends me an email with the transcription, and I can go online and listen to the actual recording. Or, of course, I can do all of that through my Google phone, right, through my Android phone. It's quite an amazing thing. And Google Voice there's just a lot of features that I'm not even using yet. Things that I'm not able to talk about. That I actually talked about last night in the Second Life chat that I really shouldn't have. But I won't talk about them on the air, but there are some really very cool
coming on the horizon?
There are some very cool things that Google Voice does.
That maybe our listeners should stay tuned for down the road?
Yeah. The transcriptions aren't great, Archander is saying the same thing. The transcriptions usually suck badly. Yeah. They're not good generally, but on the other hand, it depends. It depends on how clearly the person at the other end of the line speaks, frankly.
Enunciation.
And everybody nowadays is mush mouthed. You know, people are getting worse and worse at it. Yeah, I just want to say that I'm going to give you a call and we'll talk later. Okay.
Nobody knows how to enunciate anymore.
Exactly. So when I get a call from somebody like that, it comes out and Google Voice just makes up words.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've trained my daughter over the years because my hearing is bad. You have to enunciate, honey. So when my daughter calls me, it's usually about 95%. She'll say, hi, Dad. Don't forget you have to pick me up later. How hard is that to do when you're on the phone with someone? And particularly nowadays when most phone connections are crappy to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
People leave a message. Hi, I just wanted to give you a call, so call me back. 5-5-5-2-2.
What? Wait a minute. What is with that? I get that a lot. People on my answer machine, they get all the time in the world, you know, to leave a message, but they say the number so fast and so unclear.
Yep.
It's like, huh?
At work, I tell people, if you're going to leave a phone number, speak slowly and clearly, please. So then people, they think they're over-exaggerating, you know? They say, all right, this is, please give me a call at 555-1212. When I leave a number, it's always, hi, this is Nick. Please call me back, 555-1212. That's 555-1212. How hard is that to do, to be polite to the person at the other end? You know what? Maybe I don't have your phone number memorized. I'm sorry. It's not because I don't love you more than I love everyone else on earth. I'm old. So do me a favor and repeat your phone number.
It's just like the folks that call here.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, I got to put my mic on.
Right.
Turn my mic off. And I have.
You're right.
So what do the folks do on the other end? They start talking softly too. No! Speak up, please! I need to hear you! And you talk, I can't hear over Nick and Steve!
One of my favorite exchanges. Three Stooges, men in white, and they're talking to this nurse who's whispering. They're whispering. And finally, one of them says, whispering. She says, I don't know about you, but I have laryngitis.
But that actually got me thinking. We had a caller last week asking about audio transcription, automatic audio transcription.
Yeah.
Feed it into Google Voice.
Google Voice has a limit to how much that can be.
Yeah.
But it certainly wouldn't be impossible to do, I think. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
That's a very good question. Or talk to your phone.
Yeah, a lot of phones have
Google phones have Google Voice transcription built in.
Yeah.
So I can actually go into a note, for example, speak the note, and have it transcribe that note to text.
Look, I admit, and I'm sorry that I came from the dark side.
Now, see? You're loving your phone. I knew you would. I told
all,
you you
it's
would.
It's all blaming on my daughter, and thank God for her.
I told you you would.
Now, this one I've been very pleased with. You know, it's easy to work with. Matter of fact, I even set up a bunch of ringtones.
See?
Got the callback set back up.
There you go.
That, one of our dear friends from the previous station, Snow Patrol Crazy. Eat that. Why do you got that in there? I go, just to tick you off.
You're right. No, and that's the other thing you can do in Google Voice, of course. You can set different messages for different people.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, for when my wife calls, it's always, oh, hi, honey, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry I'm not here. Please leave a message. And with other people, it says, you know, just shut up, leave a message. So, yeah. Okay, we'll be back in, apparently we're going to take a break. And somebody's reminding us about the Call Me widget. So talk about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. 59 minutes after the hour, and you know what that means, of course. We're going to take a slightly longer break, not because we don't love you with every single fiber of our being, but simply because there are so many more important things that have to be said before we do that. So we're going to take that break, and when we are done taking that break, you will be back with us. I will talk about the Call Me widgets in Google. We've got more news. We're happy to take your calls, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back. Yeah, it's a whole lot more sound bites. It's member supported Jazz 90. You know the whole routine by now. Member supported Jazz 90.1. Glad to see you.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound bites celebrating 20 years.
Me, Derek Lucas, for homework. Every Sunday evening, 10 o'clock,
90. WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online. Does it scare you to know that bed bugs are real or that termites cause billions of dollars in property damage? Does it frighten you to know that cockroaches contribute to asthma? Well, it shouldn't. What should really scare you is not knowing these things. Because knowing about household pest threats is the best way to prevent them. And it's a lot less scary than the prospect of learning about them the hard way. This message brought to you by the National Pest Management Association. Learn more at pestworld.org.
Malnutrition claims the lives of an estimated 3.5 million children every year. But this condition is both preventable and treatable. Starve for Attention is the latest global malnutrition campaign launched by Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF. Starve for Attention aims to raise awareness through a series of online documentaries. To see what the faces of malnutrition look like and to learn how you can help, visit starvedforattention.org. A public service from Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières.
This is station manager Rob Linton. If you're a local jazz musician, Jazz 90.1 wants to hear from you. You and your band could be featured as part of our 2010-2011 live studio concert series. We'll tell you how you could perform for local listeners on the radio as well as internet worldwide, and we'll also promote your concert for listeners and give you your very own copy of the concert. If you're interested in performing live jazz on the radio and internet, visit the Jazz 90.1 website at www.jazz901.org for more information on how to apply. The Rochester area has been home to great jazz musicians, and it still is. Let everybody hear how great you are live on the radio from the studios of Jazz 90.1. Hurry, slots are filling up fast. For more information, including how to apply, visit jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I said before the break that I would talk about the Google Call Me widget, as Archandra mentioned in the IRC chat, Octothorpe Soundbites. And it's actually pretty cool. You can, if you have a Google number, and it used to be the Google numbers were limited. You had to be invited into the beta, which I was very early on. I got a great phone number. Now it's tougher to get a good phone number. Mm-hmm. My phone number is great. And
what may your phone number be?
My phone number is 466-4253.
Which is?
Spells I'm Nick F.
Nice.
Isn't that nice?
Apple,
and it's in the 585 area code.
Cool. Apple Cider just got one. It's 2102 Mac.
Very nice. Very nice.
So we're going to cut down on our Frontier voicemail, we hope.
Well, and that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
But one of the things that you can do is you can put on your website a Call Me widget that you get from Google. And what happens is you click that button,
mm-hmm.
right? And it asks you for your phone number.
Okay.
It then would, let's say it's my Call Me widget. Google Voice calls me, Google Voice calls you, and connects us together.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Slick.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it is.
And what's really nice is they don't get your number.
Oh, there's no call.
I mean, I just gave my number out over the air, so now I'll get, you know, 1,000 calls on my Google Voice phone. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. I should turn my phone off. If it starts to ring, I'm going to get really angry.
If I see
now
you
the wiseacres are...
Now I see you start vibrating in your chair.
No, it's actually still on. I better.
Oh, I want to see you vibrate around a little bit.
I'm going to turn the ringer down. There we go. Just off. It's even vibrating.
You might say it's a
Google Voice.
Dead ringer.
Exactly. But I'm bummed. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Tip your waiter. So that's pretty cool. The other thing is, and I can talk about some of this stuff. Everybody knows about it. There's an API for Google Voice, application programming interface, where you can actually program features. And that's one of the things you can program. You can set it up to call people. You can set it up to reply to mm-hmm. text messages. You can do all this cool stuff and working on some of that. I don't know how I would apply any of that to Soundbites. What might be interesting? Oh, you know, might be interesting.
Hmm.
If you were to text a keyword of some sort, like link base some word, look up all of the links that you put up for that keyword in, say, the description. And send you those links. Wouldn't that be kind of interesting?
Hmm.
So then they would simply text the Soundbites, and we have to get a Soundbites number. Then when they text the Soundbites number, and I'll have to think about that. I have to think about that. It's not something I'm going to do this afternoon. I have things to do.
I'd say a life.
I have a life. But yeah, so anyway, that's the call widgets from Google Voice. And Google Voice used to be invitation only, and Google Voice used to be not for profit only, so we could have done it. But now they seem to have opened it up to everybody, and it seems to be the regular Google user license.
Mm-hmm.
So just like Google Docs, where you can pretty much use it for anything you want,
mm-hmm.
if you want the professional version with support and help and everything else here for each person who's on Google Docs, which, believe me, is cheap. But if
that
you just
is.
Want to use it, go ahead and use it, right? And they don't care what you use it for. And it seems, don't take me for gospel. Not only am I not a lawyer, I haven't really spent a lot of time yet looking this up, but it seems that Google Voice is now under the same end-user license agreement. It's pretty cool. I'm becoming more and more convinced that it's pretty cool. The API is not, well, Archandra says the API is unofficial. It's not unofficial. There is an official API. We just don't have it. It's out there. Trust me, the document is out there for Google people, but it's just not made public yet. And the terms of service used to be for personal use only. And it used to be for not-for-profit and personal use only. But when you go to the terms of service now, you don't see that special terms of service that used to be there. You just see the regular Google terms of service.
Okay.
So that just happened. Well, I saw it last week.
relatively new.
And I haven't looked at the, I don't look at the terms of service every week because, you know, I was a beta tester and I was using it for testing and But when I went to set up one for Saunders, I went to just look at the terms of service, move to people I was talking to that, yes. And instead of taking me to the special terms of service, it took me to the regular terms of service. So, and Google Voice is just, it really is pretty neat. You don't have to have a Google phone to use it. It will work with any cell phone, any landline phone. You can have it forward your text messages to your cell phone. You can have it ring multiple phones. You can get your Google Voice number in any state in the United States. So it really is pretty cool. It doesn't have to be the 585 area code. It doesn't have to be any place. You want to pretend you're in Los Angeles, you can do that.
It's a neat way for people to do long-distance phoning, basically, for free. You know, if you have family in another city, you get a Google Voice number in that city, and then they can call you for free.
Right. And then Google forwards the number, and it's all good. All right, let's go to the news. Six people have been arrested on suspicion of stealing credit cards, personal information, and banking details as part of a suspected online banking fraud on Tuesday and Wednesday. Officials from a bunch of law enforcement agencies you couldn't care less about, since none of them was Scotland Yard, executed five search warrants across London and at an address in Navan, County Meath, Ireland. Five people and one woman, aged 25 to 40, were arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to commit online banking fraud and Computer Misuse Act offenses. They all currently remain in custody at a central London police station while inquiries are ongoing. The arrests are part of Operation Dynamo Phone. It's an investigation by the police in the European Union into a network of suspects. Dynamo Phone. It's kind of that steampunk name that I really like. A bunch of suspects believed to systematically obtain large quantities of personal information such as online bank account passwords and credit card numbers. The networks are suspected of using online phishing in order to steal money in those accounts from those accounts and use credit card details fraudulently. The offenses have been committed almost entirely online. The reason you should care is because the people who were fished were not all in the European Union. Many of them were here in the United States. Inquiries indicate that more than 10,000 online bank accounts and 10,000 credit cards have been compromised. Attempted bank account takeover fraud amounting to approximately $2 million has been identified, with $600,000, which was stolen successfully. They tried for $2 million worth of stuff, and they ended up with $600,000, which is still that's a pretty decent little payday.
Not pocket change.
Yeah. The total amount stolen using compromised credit cards is yet to be established, but by using the industry-agreed standard formula, it's estimated to be worth more than $5 million. So there's a better payday. The online scam is believed to have stemmed from the gang sending large quantities of unsolicited spam mail directing unsuspecting victims to spoof websites, which are purporting to be legitimate online banking sites. Yeah, I got one today.
What?
I got one today telling me that there had been a suspicious transaction at my Chase bank account and that I should log in.
And you don't have one.
I don't have one anymore. I haven't had one in, 17 years. And,
is Chase even around?
Yeah, it is.
I thought they went under another name, though.
Maybe they do. It was the Chase bank. And so, but I use Thunderbird. So if I roll over the URL, which said, you know, chase.com, yada, 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 I look underneath and it's someplace.ru in Russia, something, something. So particularly when you get an email thing, check the URL before you click on it.
Yeah, but you know what? If you've got to stop and think about it, you want to click on?
Well, that's the problem. People don't stop and think, oh, there's something wrong in my account. Click.
Better is when you get the, you've got a relative who, now they're doing that. Have you seen the commercials where they set up a place in New York that actually did this? We think you're owed money from a relative who died or whatever. So we need your name, your social security number, your passwords, the names of your animals.
Yeah, there's commercials for IE that do that with a fake bank.
Customers. We see that all the time. We see that all the time.
One of the latest scams is one of your relatives is stuck overseas. You know, they got mugged, lost their money and their passport, and need you to wire them $1,000 so they can get home.
Right, right. And then instead of calling that relative, they say, well, my cell phone was stolen, so you can't call it. Call it anyway.
You can call.
If they answer, it was a scam.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Even if they were at another phone, usually you can call collect.
Right, and if they're gonna
I'm stuck at Heathrow and need $1,000 to get home.
Okay, that could happen, yeah. Right? However, they can call you collect for that money mm-hmm. rather than find somebody who could send an online message that might or might not get to you in a timely manner. Yeah. Hello?
Yep.
What's wrong with this picture?
It used to, a few years ago, there were scams with area codes. You'd get a message on your answering machine. You know, Uncle Bill's in the hospital. You better call this phone number and find out. And it was like Guam. So there are overseas international area codes that look like regular phone numbers, but it's still an international long-distance call to a U.S. protectorate.
Right.
And you get a phone bill for $50.
Or $200.
And the bad guy split it with the phone company
right.
at the other end. Yeah.
So our question to you, do you worry about losing money online? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Bodan did. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Just received this from U.S. Mailman within the last hour, a nice little letter from Time Warner Cable that reads, Dear Roadrunner customers, we are writing to inform you that effective September 1st, 2010, we will be increasing the price of our Roadrunner high-speed internet product from $49.99 per month to $54.95 per month for all Roadrunner standard only customers. My question to you, gentlemen, and maybe to some of the listeners out there, how interested is Roadrunner in keeping customers that they've had for the last X number of years? Do they have like a retention division where they will dangle something out to keep you there? Or is it time for customers, because I'm sure this is not only myself, that will maybe want to consider going to another product such as with the telephone companies?
Frontier DSL.
One of the underwriters of this show.
We've heard conflicting stories. Some people call up and complain, and they're given the lower rate as an extension. Some people call up and complain and are told, fine, go away. It's very tricky.
Mm-hmm. It is very tricky. And Time Warner Roadrunner certainly is an exceptional product. We're not saying anything bad about it.
Mm-mm.
I personally am a Frontier customer and have had nothing but wondrous success with their product since the day I got it.
And for the time being, this rate increase is only for people that have Roadrunner and not Time Warner Television.
Correct.
That comes later.
Right. Right now it's for those who are only on the basic plan.
I have the Roadrunner standard. Apparently there's a slower version of Roadrunner, and like, I would consider stepping down to that slower version. In your opinion, would I notice a great difference?
Well, the price, it's like $10 cheaper for one-tenth the speed. I don't think it's worth it.
Okay, so that's a good point of view. I didn't know exactly if it was 50% slower or if it's you're mentioning it's 10%.
From the last time I read it, the Roadrunner Lite was like 1 megabit,
uh-huh.
and standard is 15.
Yeah.
And now, what about their highest one? They had, I believe, the turbo.
They've got 15 with turbo can be pushed. It pushes it to 20. Yeah, and that's their regular $50 a month deal. Now going to 55. There was an article about this on Stop the Cap last week. What a lot of people are thinking is that they're penalizing you for not buying cable TV because they expect that you are watching television shows on the internet.
Well, here's the other thing: is right now there's a promotion that's good for another 12 months. You can get both Roadrunner and basic cable for $2 more than the price of internet.
Yeah.
See that? And that's the kind of thing that it's the bundling, which is what they really make their money on, and so that's what
right.
they want.
I'm never
going to say anything bad about Time Warner. They've got an excellent product. Only you can decide if it's worth that much money to you.
But on the other hand, I'm sure if I went to the Frontier Telephone website, they would also. Do they show pricing on their products?
They show their current deals. I don't know if they show their regular pricing.
Right. I would feel free to give them a call and mm-hmm. and say you're thinking about switching. What's the deal?
And how difficult or easy is it to remove the modem box, which is hooked up to the cable line, and get their connection?
It's nothing. They do most of the work, right? They come out to your house and do whatever the hookup part is, and then all you have to do is hook your computer.
Some of them, all they do they'll come out to the house, and all you got to do is, if you've got multiple phone lines, they'll send you the box, and all it is putting a filter on your other phones. And one end goes into the phone part, the other part goes into the modem where you hook up the modem and you're connected.
That is one nice thing that DSL has, is that if you move your computer to another room in the house, mm-hmm. you just use the phone jack there. You don't have to rewire your cable TV.
Right.
Okay.
Although most of us have cable TV in all the rooms in our house anyway.
Well, if other I'm sure there's other listeners that will be affected by this. So effective September 1, they're jacking up the price about $5 a month.
No, and like I said, Time Warner Cable, great product. I personally am a Frontier user and a huge fan of their stuff. I think they're great, and when I moved, it was the best move I ever made. It was great. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave, Steve, me, Nick, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And how exciting is that?
Yep. Got another birthday coming up soon.
Yes, we do.
We should.
21
well, we,
years on the air.
We
21.
Should congratulate Al and Ray on the Polka Show
yeah.
for 30 years.
Man,
yeah.
they're old.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Ray's older than Al, though, because Ray was here
before.
First. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because we're coming up on 21.
Yeah. Somebody in the forums. Wait, I have to go back and see who that was. Oh, no, nobody in the forums. It was Tay. Hey,
oh,
Tay over in the Twitter account. Said, what's up with Froyo and Verizon? That's what's up with Froyo and Verizon. Very funny. Yeah, I've been waiting for my Froyo update since midnight yesterday when, you know, they said it was on the 6th. But now there's a rumor, only one website, but before I started out on my morning of market and everything else, I didn't get a lot of time to look things up, but there's one site that's saying that Verizon has held off now. They've stopped updating Froyo, the Android 2.2. The
okay,
Android
2.2
update
for
Android-based devices because they found a problem with it. And I'd rather have it late and right. I'd rather have it right than early. So that's okay. But they really need to get it right, and here's why. The continuing good news about the sales of smartphones running Google's Android operating system. Android smartphone activations have reached, this is just smartphones, by the way. It's not tablets and anything else. 200,000 a day.
A day?
A day. That's an increase of more than 200% since this year's first quarter when activations were around 65,000 a day. At 200,000 activations a day, 1 million phones will be sold every 5 days. Every 5 days, a million phones. 6 million every 30 days, and from August 1 to the end of the year, 30 million new handsets will be in consumers' hands. But that's only if sales remain static at 200,000 a day, which hasn't been the case all year. Just 2 months ago, sales were at 100,000 a day. 1 month later, they'd climbed to 160,000 a day. Now they're at 200,000 a day. Given those kind of increases, 30 million handsets by the end of the year is a very conservative estimate. All those sales have come at a cost to other smartphone makers. Research in Motion's BlackBerry smartphone line has seen its market share shrink by 9%. They're now at 28% of the U.S. market. Android U.S. sales passed the longtime top dog in the smartphone market, which is Apple's iPhone. During the first half of the year, Android U.S. sales accounted for 27% of all smartphone sales, compared to 23% for Apple, according to Nielsen. Of course, amidst this celebration, and that's given the fact that a lot of those people were upgrading, bought new phones because they were upgrading to iPhone 4, and those sales count. Of course, amid this celebration over Android sales, perverse sorts might raise the ghost of Android's greatest failure, the Nexus One, an Android smartphone made by Google that went the way of Wave. But, you know, who wants to rain on Google's parade? What do you think of Google's parade? Give us a call, 585-96-JAZZ. Hi, how are you?
Say that again.
585. I'm saying
slowly
and clearly.
Enunciate.
Right? 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. That number in Bayonne, and it would be in Bayonne, 1-800-790-0415. I'll tell you what, I love my Android phone. Of course, rumor is that the Droid, the original Droid, is end of life very soon. And that's, you know, it's only been 8 months, but it's the phone market, which is a lot different from the...
it's no different than computers. I mean, yeah, laptop. Exactly, you love that laptop.
It's just a little more accelerated than the laptop market. But one of the things that they're actually saying is, with a lot of the new features that the new phones have, the 2.3 update, the one after this one, okay, will take advantage of features that the droid simply doesn't have. You know, internal devices that the droid simply doesn't have. So what's the point of upgrading? It's not, you know, they'll continue to upgrade 2.2 with fixes and increases where they can, but that's not going to, you know, there's no point in giving them 2.3 when they can't use any of the new stuff.
And one of the things about the droid is that there are many companies making droid phones and Android-compatible phones, so there's that much more production involved. So HTC is probably the biggest, HTC and Motorola.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I said right back at the beginning when Android phones were first coming out. History will repeat itself. Apple put out a terrific piece of hardware in the Macintosh, a terrific piece of software in the Mac OS, and continues to sell well and do well, but with the astonishing tidal wave of Windows machines, which were cheaper and were good enough, they've taken over the PC market. And I believe the same thing is going to happen with the phone market. The iPhone is a terrific product. iOS 4, not the Cisco version, is an exceptional product. There's no question of any of that. But Android phones, which I think are also exceptional products, but even if you only think of them as good enough, for most people, that's good enough. You know, if I can buy a $600 phone on a carrier that I might not be on right now, or a $250 phone on a carrier that I am on that does everything I want it to do, which one am I going to get? And I have so many choices on so many networks, that's the way it goes. And I think we're going to see the same tidal wave of Android devices. Now, we haven't seen any Android tablets yet, but there's, you know, 50 companies have announced them for later in the year, in time for Christmas.
I was going to say.
So even if only 20 of them come out, that's 20 to 1.
This holiday season, I think you're going to see a lot of stuff out there.
Right.
Because, again, you know, they're going to be fighting for your dollar, because even though the government says, oh, the economy's coming up back.
Right. And even if half of them are the alleged piece of junk that the Gen Touch 78 is, which I have not yet seen, so it's an alleged thing because I don't know. But even if half of them are like that, it's still 10 to 1.
Yeah,
you know, so
you still win.
You still win. How do you not win? And over the next few years, I think we're going to see the same thing happen in the device market, whether it's phone or pad or what, that happened in the computer market. Apple will retain a core of people who are either fanatics or are able to afford the higher end or appreciate the things that Apple does so incredibly well. And everybody else will go with the other product. And in the PC world, it was Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And in the device world, it's Android. And
right.
and that's not to take away from either one. They're both exceptional products.
Not at all.
But it really is, I think, what's going to happen. We're going to see the same thing.
Well, like I was saying before, you know, I still, you know, went to this other phone and I still don't use it for the web. Mainly what I wanted it for was to be able to do the texting and the phone calls. And
how
have a phone, though, that has some other capabilities is cool. I like having it. I won't deny that. But as far as surfing the web and everything else, no, I do that on a daily basis, 8 hours a day. Same with emails. I don't need my emails coming to my phone. I'm sorry, but I get enough of that stuff throughout the day. When I leave the shop, that's what I want to do, is leave the shop, and emails, oh, they can wait until tomorrow. Otherwise, if anybody needs to get a hold of me, they have my number, and they can still do what they call me.
Yeah, how odd. You want to use your phone to make phone calls.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I was looking at a couple of the Droid X, I guess, is the one that just came out. There were a half a dozen reviews that I read, and I suddenly realized none of them mentioned phone call quality. None of them mentioned the fact that you can make phone call on these phones and what
funny
the quality that was.
You might want to use it for that.
All right, we've got a guy on the line, Dennis, who's been very, very patient. Where are you calling from, Dennis?
The city.
New York?
Rochester.
Okay. What can we do for you?
I needed a quick 101 on this Android stuff or whatever. I mean, I just sort of haven't been paying attention over the months as to, is this a smartphone? Can you just do I'm going to hang up and let you guys do just start from the basics of what you're talking about here and why they're different than my regular cell phone that I get that doesn't do anything except make phone calls.
Sure. I'd be glad to do that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, you know how about an iPhone where you get all these apps? It's not just the phone. You also get all of these apps that you can run in addition to it. Some of them use the cell phone, or you can use wireless or whatever. You get Facebook and Twitter and games and news and information and sports, and you can watch YouTube videos and all this other stuff. The Android operating system is the same thing on a non-iPhone phone. So I've got a Motorola Droid. There's also the Droid X, the Droid 2, the HTC Evo, the Incredible.
Yeah, it used to be that no one cared what the operating system on your phone was, but BlackBerry has an operating system, Palm has an operating system, there's the Symbian operating system, and only right. the really geeky people cared or knew.
Right. But now people want to use their phone. As Dave was saying, there are still the Luddites who just want to make phone calls. But there are people who want to use their phones for games and for information and for all the, it's essentially carrying a small computer in your pocket. For a while, those are called smartphones. For a while, the only one that was available was the iPhone. But now Android, which is a division of Google, the Android operating system is out, and a whole bunch of companies are making, and you're going to cringe when I say this, but iPhone-like phones, right, in terms of the fact that they do apps and you can make calls and all the other stuff. So it's an iPhone-like device from different manufacturers. And so that's essentially what Android is. It brings an iPhone-like operating system to not an iPhone. And you can get Android, you know, you can only get an iPhone on AT&T. You can get Android phones on AT&T and every other carrier on Earth, it seems. That's what Android is, and that's the difference between Android and iPhone. Really, it's they're from two different companies, and one is limited to AT&T and the other is limited to everywhere. Oh, and if you want porn, you want the Android. But that's really the difference between them.
There's porn on the iPhone. It's just in the web browser, not as an app.
Right, right.
Actually, what makes it even more confusing is the big name company, Sports Illustrated, put out a swimsuit issue. Playboy has an app. But if average, you know, Joe Schmo puts out an app, that gets rejected.
Right. Right. What we're saying is Steve Jobs has famously said you can't have porn on an iPad unless it comes from, you know, Suit Illustrated.
Yeah.
Or
the big name.
Right, right, right. The people who paid a lot of
deep,
money to
yeah,
put
deep
porn
pockets.
On it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So that's the Android. I hope that answers your question. Or if not, I hope it confuses you more. Our next caller is George. Where are you calling from, George?
George. This is George calling from Greece.
Hiya, George. What can we do for you?
About 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago, as you were wrapping up the show, you posed what I recall as a question. What is the difference between a web browser and a search engine?
Did we?
Well,
okay.
That's the way I remember it. Now, I won't say that that was exactly the proper representation, but it posed a question that I'd like to hear an answer to.
Right. A search engine is a thing that you can use to search out other pieces of information. A web browser is typically how you get to a search engine, right? The web browser is simply a way to connect to places on the web. One of those places to which you can connect is a search engine.
To let you find other places to connect to.
To find other places to yeah. connect to. And web browsers don't only connect to webs. Search engines don't only connect to websites. For example, there are search engines to let you search through IRC. There are search engines to let you search for the genealogy sites. Parts of them are just search engines. You search through their database. A search engine essentially searches a database.
The
way you connect to ones that are not local to your machine are through a web browser, which is just a way to get to servers out on the internet that serve web pages.
And two of the big search engines are Google and Bing for searching the web to find other web pages. And sometimes the browsers, Firefox is one of the big ones, their default homepage is Google. Because typically what happens is you open your web browser and you want to look for something, so they start you at a search engine. Ironically, one of Google's reports on what people are searching for is one of the highest search terms is Yahoo.com. Yahoo is sort of a combination search engine and information portal in that it will search the web, but it also gives you news and weather and television all in one web page, and that's often called a portal because it gives you a lot of information on one page, then you can go to other pages' details.
Well, did that clear it all up at all, George?
You've done a fine job, except you've brought into play another term here. So if I look at kind of the total pie out there. I understand there's search engines and portals.
Well, a portal is one of those slippery terms. Mm-hmm. And basically a portal is whatever you want it to be. But what people tend to think of as a portal is like Yahoo, where you can go and say, I'm interested in, or if you go to about.com or Yahoo or any of those, I'm interested in X. And then it will present you with two sections. One is, here are the things our experts think are the best places to go and read about X.
Uh-huh.
Or if you don't like any of those, here's our search engine.
Okay. So if I go back to Google, how's Google, well, I heard talk about it being the king of search.
Yes.
Implying a search engine.
Yes.
But when I try to log on, I start with a web server?
All of that is coming off a web server. Anytime you use a web browser, you are connecting with a web server. So the way you reach the Google search engine is through your web browser to their web server.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all on the web, and then there are search engines on the web, there are news engines on the web, there are companies on the web in serving information.
Right.
Right. So a web browser is just an application you use to get to the web where you get all this other stuff. That music tells me we got to go. Thanks, George, but we got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yes, we are back. We had, I hope we got George all straightened out with his questions. But we have somebody else on the line. Who's this?
This is Cornelius McCarthy.
Hi, Cornelius. Where are you calling from?
Right now, I'm about to park the car, so I'm not talking on the cell phone while I'm driving.
Good.
Up in Penfield.
Penfield, and what can we do for you?
I purchased an Android primarily as a programming mechanism because I considered it that the Apple people were too difficult to do business with.
Yeah.
I have a general question at this point. Is it your understanding that the SDK for the Android will give you access to all of the hardware? Specifically, do you get access to the GPS location? Do you get access to the voice in and out? Do you get access to the camera?
Yes. You get access to everything.
I haven't found it all yet, but I've got some work to do. Clearly.
Well, if you get the official SDK from Google, right?
I downloaded it from Android Developer on the net.
Yeah, it should be the same one, because the one that Google offers is the one they use. So if it exists, this SDK should be able to get to it.
Okay, that's what I'd hope to. I've yet to find a clean roadmap. How do I do this stuff? But that's just a matter of my working through it all, I suppose.
Yeah, there's a lot of information and unfortunately a lot of misinformation on the net. I'm personally waiting for App Inventor, I think they call it. It's basically there's a product coming out that's basically little jigsaw bits and pieces for the. It's kind of analogous to HyperCard for the Android phone. Really, really looking forward to it. Because I'm not a programmer. You clearly are, and just SDK, software development kit, that acronym doesn't scare you like it does so many of us. Congratulations, and keep in touch. Let us know what you're building.
Well, I was very happy to hear the number you stated a little while ago, which is we started listening to you again because you come on right before the German radio program, which is my wife's thing.
Sure.
And I was very happy to hear that the 200,000 activations means that to accomplish my end goals, I may never have to do business with Apple.
the thing that I like about the
iPhone and the iPad and the Android is these new phones are basically putting excellent quality displays in the hands of a large number of consumers at very little cost.
Exactly, and that's exactly right. The displays are getting better and better as time goes on. The AMOLED displays that are coming out now. There's a company called Corning Glass. You may have heard of them.
Oh, yeah.
They have a product called Gorilla Glass that they actually invented 50 years ago and never found a use for. Actually, they use it in cell phones now, but now they're going to be putting in televisions and handheld devices and a bunch of other things. And Gorilla Glass is a very, very tough silicate-based transparent material that's scratch-resistant, very clear, yada, 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 very lightweight, very high.
Flexible.
Very flexible, very high tensile strength, yada, 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 yada. And they're going to be using that now to make lighter phones. And
That's going to be the first surface of the display?
Yes, yes. And it's
I'm using the little plastic protector on the thing now. I assume in your experience that's a necessity.
Mostly it is. I put one on my cell phone. I have a pouch for my cell phone. I'm not one of those people who puts it in his pocket like so many people do to get them scratched up. So mine's in fairly pristine shape. But even so, I put the little plastic protector over the front. And it hasn't in any way affected my – I have a Droid, and it hasn't in any way affected my use of it at all. But the theory is with Gorilla Glass, you won't even have to do that.
The Droid is not my primary phone at the moment. I have an old-fashioned one with a pull-out antenna. That's what I'm talking to you on now. And
which is why it's so clear.
Which is the Droid has turned out to be extremely useful for Google Maps. I have to travel through the part of the eastern border by car once a week down near Washington.
Yep.
And it's just worth its weight in gold. I mean, it is because it's alive in real time and you get the traffic. It's just extremely convenient to show me alternate routing, traffic, and everything else.
I have used it to take my daughter to look at various colleges. And I'm one of those people who gets lost in my own driveway.
Uh-huh.
But I have no fear anymore. And I said to my wife, this must be what you feel like all the time when you get in the car. I just get in the car. I set this thing up. I tell it where I want to go, and it takes me there. I am done.
Yeah. And it's all free from Google.
And it's all free.
You pay extra time for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I have another question, which is it sort of gets to the one you had earlier about IP providers.
Yeah.
I have a Time Network connection. I have a Verizon, because I'm traveling, consulting, I have a Verizon National Access connection, and I have an Android. Have you heard of any apps where the phone connected back through USB is providing the internet connection?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. It's called tethering and mobile hotspots.
And both the Android X and the Droid X and the Droid 2 phones can do that. We'll be able to do that with the 2.2 update, which is coming within the next month for those. Droid itself will not be able to do that.
The Evo does it as well. Some of the phones have a Wi-Fi hotspot built in that will convert the cellular signal to Wi-Fi, and then you don't need USB to your computer. It just creates a Wi-Fi signal for you.
Yeah, but if I'm connected by USB, it's a matter of pushing bits to get it from one place to the other. Is that something that you have access to through the SDK?
Yes.
But it's limited by handset.
Right.
It's loaded by what?
Handset. So, for example, as I just said, the Droid will never have that because Verizon has stripped it out of the 2.2 update for Verizon. But the Droid, for the Droid. Droid 2, Droid X, the HTC Evo, a couple of others have it. So it's handset dependent.
The iPhone has it, but AT&T hasn't allowed it in the past.
Is this a software limitation that they've put into the operating system?
Yes, or rather they've taken out the software capability from the Droid update.
Uh-huh.
However, if you root your phone, you can do that. George Cornelius, we have to go.
Okay.
But stay in touch. Let us know how your device is working. Thanks. All right, I think we've got time for another call. It's time for another call. Dave is setting that up even as we speak.
Yeah, a lot of people have gotten things like the Verizon MiFi that are cellular to Wi-Fi converters, so you can use your computer, your cell phone with Wi-Fi, and then only have one cellular bill.
Right. Our next caller is Tom. Where are you calling from, Tom?
From Rochester.
And what can we do for you?
Well, I'm not too computer oriented, and I'm a little bit confused with what happened to me last night. I have a Dell computer with Microsoft Windows, and I do have a security package with McAfee. Last night when I tried to get into the internet, a security tool from Microsoft came up and told me that I have 26 infections in my computer and that I have to do something about it immediately.
Microsoft does not make a program called Security Tool. You've been hacked by a fake message.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is the case. They won't let me get into Outlook, my email account. They won't let me get into the internet. But when I managed to get into McAfee, and McAfee says your computer is secure.
Yes. Now, see, here's the difference, though. You're running McAfee is for antivirus. A lot of this other stuff is spyware, trojans, and spam.
Spyware, trojans, trans, viruses.
Well, if you can get to download Malwarebytes and Super Anti Spyware and run those two,
you may have to download on another computer.
Yeah, go to another computer.
Yep. I don't have another computer.
Go to a friend. And on their machine, go to the securitytango.com. That's securitytango.com, all one word, of course.
Okay.
And, thank you. And click on Let's Dance. Pick your machine. That would be the Windows Waltz. And follow the instructions step by step. Download all that software. Print out the page so you can take it home with you.
Mm-hmm.
Download all the software and burn it to a CD or put it on a thumb drive that you'll then have to clean off again later. And take it back home and follow all the steps.
Okay.
And that will clean off your machine.
Yeah, Microsoft's program is called Microsoft Security Essentials. And the bad guys have started making fake programs that sound like real programs.
When you click on those things that come up, you get caught.
Right. So
yeah,
it's a fake message that catches you.
I didn't want to touch it. I let it ride right now, too, so I haven't done anything with
it. Yeah, just cancel out of it. Do not.
Well, a lot of times you can't cancel it because the cancel button runs it anyway.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I can't cancel anything on here.
Well, you could do a three-finger. Well,
I'm surprised that
wait a minute, no.
McAfee.
One thing you can do is you can do a three-finger salute. Control-Alt-Delete. It'll bring up the processes running, and you can just select that one process
sometimes,
and say, end it.
Yeah, sometimes it's too late. It's already infected you.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, no.
But definitely go to a friend's house, get all the pieces of Security Tango, and run them.
Okay, and then run that piece of software?
Run all of them. There, mm-hmm. If you read the directions, you'll see you download three or four products. So download them, burn them, or put them on a thumb drive. Take it to your house and follow those instructions step by step.
So okay.
Get all the pieces and parts and do it.
Yeah, I'll try that and see what happens.
All right. Good luck, Tom.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. One of the things that I'm always suggesting to people is a fairly simple way to help you understand that there's a problem is to change the color scheme of your windows, because almost all of these things that come up fake the standard Windows look. So if you've changed your color scheme and you see something come up in the old original blue color scheme, let's say you change your color scheme to green or red, and you see something come up in blue, you know it's fake. You know immediately that it's a fake window being brought up by a website, which is generally how these things happen. So my suggestion is...
And it's the same fake programs can pop up on your Macintosh, too. And when it says it's scanning your C drive and found viruses, that's a good way to know it's fake on your Macintosh.
Yeah, right.
You don't have a C drive.
Right, same thing with Linux. All right. Well, that music tells me we're done for another week. Whole bunch of news items I didn't get to. Whole bunch of stuff that we didn't talk about, but we talked about a lot of good things this week. And I want to thank each and every one of you called in. For those of you who did not call in, I'm shocked and dismayed. Shocked and dismayed. But you'll get another chance next week because we'll be back at noon again next week. For Dave Enright and for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank you for wasting two solid hours of your life listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. And like I said, you'll get another chance to do it again next week, or you can download the podcast, of course. A friend of the show, Chris Reich, has graciously gotten it. So we're right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So long, folks.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.